And I'm going to give you a very quick update on the review of temperature by photo period interaction in the modeling of soybean phenology. Actually, my focus is on the reproductive phase, that is the R stages, so-called. And first of all, I will say a few words about the soybean crop, just to give people refresh on that part, and then evidence is from past experiments, and then the summary of the approaches in the models, and I will end up with the questions and thoughts. For soybean, two words. One is, it is a short day crop. Or in other words, it has to sleep enough hours before flowering. That's the feature of the crop. And another one is, there is a considerable overlap between the vegetative stage and R stage. That is, after the initial flowering, branches and leaves continue to form, and there's an overlap of maybe 3 or 4 weeks. So that's different from crops like corn and wheat. Then the terminology for soybean phenology. Basically, at least for the system we use in the U.S., the judgment is based on the main step, what happens on the main step. And then for this stage, it's numbered after the number of fully expanded trifoliate leaves. For reproductive stage, you have several key stages, including R1, that is the beginning of flowering, and then the R3, the so-called beginning pod, that is basically the formation of pod or set of pod. Then you have this beginning seeds, that's the effective seed feeding or green feeding period, and R7 is the physiological maturity. In the U.S., we have maturity groups ranging from 0-0 in the very northern part of U.S., and down to something like, up to something like 8. But in general, soybean maturity groups can be classified into almost 12 classes. Daylands or photo period, of course, is one of the two parts I'm going to talk about. And I want to mention this one just to let people realize what's the cause of dayland change in the soybean season in the U.S. And from emergence for the soybean, it almost always sees the increasing day lengths that is longer than 12 hours. This is very important because most cases the sensitivity of photo period for soybean kicks in from day length something like 12 hours. And then another thing is in the U.S. when you move from south to north, the day length is always increasing. When you go up to north, so this is the difference when you deal with different cultivars, when you deal with phenologies at different locations in the country. Next question: why is modeling of R stage or reproductive stage important for modeling? Basically, phenology is always important for field management, and second, for modeling purposes, the R stage for soybean, it's the timer for controlling several very important processes, including the leaf and the branch growth rate, and when they terminate, the growth of vegetative stage stops, and the transition from vegetative to reproductive stage, that is marked by R1, and when the pod setting starts, that's around R3.5, and when the seeds start to fill, and when the pod starts to set, and then the seeds start to fill, and when this green fading stops. So if you don't have this one simulated correctly, I'm 100% sure your yield simulation will be wrong. And of course, you may get the yield correct even with the wrong simulation of stages, and to me, that model is even worse. What are the key issues in the modeling of soybean phenology? I think, I hope at least the most of people here agree with me. That is, overall, many models, even most models, don't perform very well in new territories. or in the unfamiliar environments or conditions, including new cultivars, including the new management, or the very unusual planting days, yeah, this type of thing. And because of that, actually, models will become less useful in terms of predictions on the new conditions, simply because they don't perform very reliably under those conditions. And also because of that, many models require calibration. We have heard this calibration many times this morning, and you will hear more throughout day, the rest of your career when you deal with models. Calibration is almost a way of life, but it's not something that we really want, because we want a model to be useful without too much calibration. And this actually calibration can be a hurdle in many applications when we do predictions. And then next, I'm going to talk about some experimental evidences or observations in terms of effects of temperature and the photoperiod on the R stage. And first of all, it's very straightforward. The higher the temperature, the earlier the flowering, or basically the development rate is positively correlated with temperature. And this response is linear for both the vegetative stage and the reproductive stage, and there is a plateau. That is, when the temperature is high enough, it will stay there until the temperature becomes surprising. And then, however, there's a considerable variation in the response of temperature. And particularly when you consider the earlier maturity groups with the later ones, the earlier ones tend to have a stronger sensitivity. Then the photoperiod effect, or the peak effect. The peak effect actually starts when the daylight becomes longer than 12 or 13 hours. Of course, there's a variation from 8 to 13 hours based on cultivars and genetics. And the longer the day gets, basically the later the flowering will arrive. So because of the let's say the plant needs to sleep enough hours. So if you have shorter nights, the plant will need more days for flowering. And then the photoperiod sensitivity does vary. And between the early maturity groups and the later ones, the early ones tend to have a less or weaker sensitivity than the later maturity. And compared to temperature, this is opposite. So this one needs to be kept in mind. And then continues with the photoperiod effects. The photoperiod response can be linear, can be curvilinear, can be both, which is also different from temperature. Temperature is almost linear. And then some cultivars will not come to flowering if daylight becomes too long. So this is the so-called obligate type of cultivars. And at the same time, we don't have a very conclusive results on the when photoperiod response starts. Although the period can be short, maybe 7 days or 10 days, but still some people believe it starts as early as the emergence, and some say no, it's not that early, it should be 4 or 5 days later. And so this is kind of still debatable. And another thing that is not very conclusive is when the photoperiod response or sensitivity ends. In some research it says it's at the end of the flower induction. So once the flower are inducted, the photoperiod response end. But many people say no, the sensitivity is still there until the very very end. So there are still inconclusive results there. Then the induction of photoperiod and temperature. Well, the research suggests the temperature and the photoperiod effects are independent, and because of that, you can basically add them together to get the interaction. And when one factor is at optimum level, then the development rate of R stage is totally controlled by the other factor. So either temperature or photoperiod. Again, there's a considerable variation among cultivars. Soybean cultivar is a big deal in modeling, because you can have a very good model that works very well for one cultivar. Then when you change it to another cultivar, even within the same or similar maturity groups, the performance model can be quite different. And this is particularly true on the photoperiod response. And next, how this part is modeled. Well, we can go back as early as the 70s, and Major and his colleagues proposed this type of response, that is a multiplicative kind of a response for the photoperiod and temperature. And the feature of this one is it considers the photoperiod effects for all stages of the crop. And at the same time, you need curve fitting to get the values of those parameters. They are not easily measured, and actually I don't know whether they are measurable or not. And then some years later, Hadley and his colleagues proposed another different approach, that is additive. And another difference is, in this approach, you have a minimum development rate no matter how bad the photoperiod condition and temperature condition is. So it maintains minimum development. This is also something different from the previous approach. And then the Sinclair, of course, is a heavy figure in the car modeling, and he and his colleagues propose another different approach. It's some kind of even fancier. That is a combination of a multiplicative and a logistic approach. Logistic approach refers to this part, the individual accounting of a temperature effect and the photoperiod. And it is shown here better in the graph for the temperature effect and the photoperiod. You see, and one of the features of this approach is it does not have the usual cardinal values, this base value and the first the turning point, the second, so on and so forth. Instead, it uses this coefficient A for temperature, coefficient B to account for this sensitivity, basically. So that's another feature of this approach. Well, SoilGirl is probably the one of the complete comprehensive soybean model, and we have several people here who are the initial developers of this approach. In this model, basically, you have this temperature response he's shown here that accounts for different stages. One is the so-called photoperiod insensitive stage, and then during this photoperiod sensitive stage. So here, x-axis is temperature, the y-axis is relative development rate. So basically, it is very conventional. Then when it comes to the photoperiod, basically, you need to look at it from this way here. When day length increase, expressed at night length. When the night length decreases, or day length increases, then you have an increase of this value, which is the inverse of a relative development rate. So it means when it is here, the development rate becomes very slow. So this is approach in the soil growth. And another thing in the soil growth to account for the differences among maturity groups is here, this is the so-called optimum photoperiod hours for different maturity groups. So when you have very early maturity groups, your optimum hours is something like 9.5 hours. Then for the later maturity groups, you have up to 12, and after that, it treats the higher one as the same optimum hours for photoperiod. Then this one is for the maturity group with this so-called VAVAS. This actually is the inverse of the relative development rate. And what it shows here is this: you see, the response among among maturity groups is not a continuous spectrum. So you have a turning point or different sensitivities. So this is the nature of this one. Then basically, if we summarize the approach in soil growth, we can see basically you need a calibration for the key coefficients, and for that purpose you need observed data for emergence as well as the V1, R1, R3, R5, and R7 to calibrate those parameters. And this calibration process many times involves the iteration procedure. You also get the optimum values, and again some people must have the experience, the end result of calibration may not be completely biological sensible. Sometimes you have a mathematical optimization, but not biologically. And then at the same time, the model assumes the temperature response function is the same for all stages, for all cultivars, when you calibrate the photoperiod. And then another feature is it tracks the post-R stages all from R1. So that means, let's say, in terms of arrow, you don't have an arrow that is inherited from early stage to the later stage. So this is another feature. Of course, it has something that can become a pitfall, because the later stage, if you are not careful enough, the later stage can occur before the early stage. So that's another feature. And then the crop girl is a successor of soy girl, and they have similarities, but there are differences also. And in terms of the time response, it has three sets of functions to account for the different stage of the crop. I think it's another big player, of course. And the feature of this one is it has only one stage that is sensitive to photoperiod, that is the very early stage until the end of juvenile phase. And for temperature, it uses this function. This is different from the conventional one, because it has only a peak, no plateau. And then there are crop genetic models, okay, that use a simplified approach to account for the photoperiod and temperature. That may work for different crops, but may not work best for any particular crop. And the soy dev actually is a new model that came around this time. And one of the differences, it uses a so-called logistic approach to account for the temperature and the photoperiod response. But if you plot them, actually, this blue line actually is very similar to other lines that have been used before, although the names are different and the forms for the functions are quite different. Then this is the photoperiod response in soy dev, and it follows this linear one, then curvilinear one. And another feature of soy dev is try to simplify the model by linking maturity group to some key development rate coefficients. So this attempt to do it using those functions, and then. We have found that it works quite satisfactorily for maturity groups up to 4, but when you move up, then you start to have issues. So, remaining questions we have. Well, first one is, does soybean remain sensitive to photoperiod after the end of floral initiation or induction? And second is, what's the real nature of the photoperiod effects? Whether it's linear, or it's a non-linear, or it's combined linear followed by non-linear. And then, what's the nature of the interaction between the temperature and peak? Whether they are additive or they are multiplicative. And then, the values of the cultivar values, how to determine them. And then, whether we should get the values for model parameters by calibration or by measurements. My final thoughts, okay? We still need dedicated experiments that are designed to address those questions. At the same time, we probably need to validate the values of the parameters that are currently derived from model calibration or parameterization. And finally, we need to incorporate genetic composition in the formula, as some authors have already precluded there. And without that, we cannot address this issue of variation among cultivars. Thank you very much.